Good evening, everybody. This is Paul Sterling. You are listening to a teleseminar on why your lover doesn't listen. And it's going to be live and interactive, and I want you to participate as much as possible. Don't worry about, like, phone etiquette. You know, are you, when should you talk? If you've got a question, you can let me know. And if you need to mute yourself, you can hit *6, mute yourself. And if you need to unmute yourself and communicate, you can hit *6 again. So what I want you to think about is, why are you on this call tonight? And I am somewhat of a mind reader, so I'm going to read your mind and I'm going to say, I know exactly why you're on this call tonight. And it's all about communication, but underneath communication, it's all about change. There's something in your relationship or relationships that you want to change. Either you have something happening that you don't want to have happen, or there's something you want to have happening that's not happening, like your lover's not listening, and you'd like them to listen, and you're wondering what happened, where did it go wrong. So I'm going to dive into that in a minute, but before I do that, I want to give you a little bit of an introduction on who I am and why I'm leading this call. And there's an expression that says, every master was once a disaster. So I claim that. I was once a relationship disaster. I went through one divorce, three broken engagements, and I noticed one common denominator in all of that. Women. No. All right. I got to be careful. I got to have a sense of humor here. No, it wasn't women. It was me. I was the common denominator in all of those. And what I didn't know is that there was actually a way of communicating that helps you enter somebody else's world or have them enter your world. And how many of you would really like to know, what does it take to stop that downward spiral? And I'm wondering if you've been in that downward spiral where a relationship starts spiraling downward and you don't know how to stop it. You don't know how to get back to love. Any of you ever wondered about how to do that?
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So I'm going to tell you a quick story here, and then I'm going to tell you about my history. I came home late the other night, about two Thursdays ago, and we got a pounding in the background. I don't understand. If someone's got noise, we'll have to mute you in a minute. All right. So I came home at about 11:30 and parked on the street right in front of my house with this car, and I got... It's like right in front of my house, and when I got out, I could hear their engine running and didn't really see anybody in the car, but didn't know any, I didn't feel like interrupting. But what I did is I went inside. I was totally tired. I fell asleep. I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I could still hear the engine running outside, and I started making up stories, you know, is somebody okay, or, you know, did they die in their car, have a heart attack? I made up all sorts of stories, and I thought, should I call the police? What should I do? So instead, being an ex-Alaskan commercial fisherman and being rough and tumble, I put on my bathrobe and slippers and grabbed the flashlight and headed out there. And I surprised a couple of people. But they were only talking. It was a young couple, and they'd been sitting there for hours and hours, and all they were doing was talking. And it's like, have you wondered what happened? What happened? How did it go from where you could sit out in a car and be really happy talking all night to where your lover hardly will listen to you? And if you're in a new relationship, you don't have to wait for things to get bad to apply what I'm about to teach. So don't worry about that. If your lover's listening to you, there are going to be a lot of tips on how to keep that happening. So if you think about it, if I'm giving you $100 bills, when do you want me to stop? Well,
Don't stop.
So that's what this is going to be about tonight. Like, why would your lover want you to stop communicating with them? That's the $100 question here, because if they're getting their needs met, they don't want you to stop. If they're not getting their needs met, they do want you to stop. So here's a tiny bit of my history just to get you understanding where I came from. I am a relationship and intimacy coach, but I definitely didn't start out to be one. I ended up getting married. I thought this was going to be the relationship of my dreams, and after 18 years, it fell apart. Basically, the communication fell apart. I didn't know how to put it back together. So I got out of that relationship, got into another relationship, got engaged. This was going to be the relationship of my dreams. Communication fell apart. And at the same time, I'm not, it's not like I'm a dumb guy. At the time this was happening, I was the highest paid consultant for the city of Albuquerque, teaching their top management about quality, productivity, and leadership, about basically communication, but not about relationship communication. And it wasn't until I stumbled on something called nonviolent communication that things turned around. And it's like I had watched some friends of mine, this couple who looked like their relationship was going to fall apart. And it didn't. And I'm going, what happened? What changed? And they said, we discovered this thing called nonviolent communication by Marshall Rosenberg. And I got everything I could. I got his books, his tapes. I actually ended up flying to Sweden to spend almost a month over there studying with him, and it turned my life around. And I came home, and I was such a different creature that friends and family started asking me about teaching them what I had learned. And since then, I've taught anywhere from minimum to maximum security inmates. I've taught at-risk youth in the detention centers and in the high school system. I've taught professors, counselors, and therapists. The Naropa University brought me in. And by the way, I'm a high school dropout. So it wasn't because of my vast education. It's because this system works so damn well that they brought me in to work with their professors. And so that's what turned it around, is understanding nonviolent communication. And I also ended up studying with a guy named Tony Robbins, and most of you know Tony. And I ended up working for him for a little while. And then he hired me to come back and teach his inner circle about systems. And part of the reason I say that is because the communication that I teach is based on a system. So tonight I'm going to teach you about how to create change and what stops your lover from wanting to listen and how do you stop that downward spiral. Now, some of you are on this call because you think you want some more information, like I'm on the call to learn something new. And learning something new is cool, but I don't think it's why you're really on the call. I think why you're really on the call is you want to make some new decisions. And hopefully during this call, I'm going to help you make 3 or 4 key and powerful decisions. Like, what do you want to do with your communication in the future? Now, I want to frame a couple other things here, and then we're going to dive into the content. I am a whitewater kayaker, and I don't know how many of you know much about whitewater kayaking. But whitewater kayaking, they have levels 1 through 5, and now they actually seem to have added a level 6. Because people are getting more and more insane. But level 1 is sort of like a flat lake. Level 2, there's some current. Level 3, there's rocks, current, obstacles. You need to have some navigation skills. Level 4, there's some real danger in there. You've got to be able to navigate pretty well, and you have to have what they call a combat role. What a combat role is like, you're able to roll your boat up again under pressure when things are going a little bad. And then level 5 is where you're a little crazy and you go over things like waterfalls and dams and all that. And so I have boated on level 5. I don't consider myself a level 5 boater because most of the time I'm on a level 5 boat, river, I'm in a state of terror. But when I'm done, I go, wow, that was very cool. I'm glad I did that. And what that has to do with relationships and communication is if you don't master communication skills and you get knocked upside down, you end up swimming. And so what you try to do in communication is avoid any communication areas where it's a little challenging. And what happens there is you lose intimacy and understanding in your relationship because you can't talk about those important things because you're afraid that you're going to get knocked upside down and can't recover. So in a boat, that's called a roll or an Eskimo roll or a combat roll. So you can roll back up in a scary situation, and then it allows you to kayak in areas you normally wouldn't. It's the same in communication. If you learn, number one, what triggers people, because tonight I'm going to go through the five top triggers that trigger your lover. So how much fun is it, by the way, to talk to somebody who's triggered?
Not fun at all.
So would it be really helpful to know what the most common triggers are and know how to avoid them?
Yes.
So I'm going to go with yes on that one. And here's the simple thing. What people tend to do is say that they talk about money and their partner gets triggered. So they say, okay, well, we can't talk about money, or we can't talk about sex, or we can't talk about politics, or we can't talk about religion, or whatever it is. And pretty soon, there's hardly anything they could talk about. And it wasn't the subject matter that really triggered their partner. It was how they talked about the subject matter that most likely triggered their partner. So number one, what I want to do is give you some tools to be able to know what the triggers are. And then number two, what to do when your partner or you get triggered. So hopefully that will be helpful for you. So I'm going to give you the number one thing, and hopefully you have a pen. And by the way, did everybody, there's a handout. If you go to magicrelationship.net/study and the number two, there's a handout for this presentation. So you can go there and get it now if you want. And I'm going to ask you to do one quick thing before we dive into the content. On the top, well, actually it's on page two, there's a little bit of a diagram, a triangle, on what makes an ideal client. I do have a little bit of a head cold, and the synapses aren't working the way that they normally do, so I apologize for that. So there's a triangle there, and it talks about what it takes to create an ideal relationship. There's three core components. And what I want you to do is rate. And if you're not in a relationship, rate your last relationship. But if you are in a relationship, you can rate this one. And the three different parts are, number one, friend. And what a friend is someone who's compassionate, understanding, and loyal. Partner is someone who has a similar vision, values, and goals, feels like you're on a team, you support each other. And then a lover, there's intimacy, passion, and romance. And some relationships, like long-term relationships end up being a little bit like a friend and a partner, and they lose the lover. So that's that. Some end up just being like a friend, and they end up being roommates. Some are friend and lover, but doesn't feel like a partner, and that's sort of friends with benefits. So you get the idea here. Now, if you could rate on a scale of 1 to 10 each of those. So if it's the best possible friend you could ever ask for, that's a 10. If it's the best partner, that's a 10. If it's the best lover, that's a 10. You add them all up, you got a potential of 30. So you don't have to share your scores here, but I just want you to get an idea of what it is that you're starting with. And hopefully the new lovers on the call, they're up there in the high 20s or 30. So why I'm telling you this is as you learn the relationship skills, you can start moving up higher and higher in that area. And the next thing I'm going to cover, and then I actually have a guest that I want to introduce and have her talk for a minute before we dive into the content. On page 3, there's the ignored to adored. There are 9 blocks, 9 areas, and there's 3 main skills. And tonight's talk is on that first skill. So the 3 skills to create a great relationship that you need is being able to clear up the past, get present, and create a bright future. And if you think about it, if you don't know how to clear up the past, what happens is the past keeps showing up. Where does it show up? It shows up in the present. And if you don't deal with that, then there's no future. So the first thing we're going to do is that first block, which is stop doing damage. We're going to learn how to communicate in a way that doesn't do damage. We're going to learn the 5 triggers. So the next part of page 3 is if you look at how a lot of communication is, when something goes wrong, where do people start? They start in denial. You could look at almost any politician. I don't care, Democrat, Republican. What do they do first? They're in denial. There isn't a problem. And then what do? They lay blame. There's a lot of finger pointing right now about like Ebola, like who created that? Everybody's blaming each other right now. And then when blaming doesn't work, people move to justifying, then shame, and then they want to quit. And what I want to do is give you communication tools that moves above the line. It moves to the place where people are being responsible and productive and loving. And that's talking about the future, not the past. Does that make sense? How different would your relationships be? And if you're not in one, look back in the past. How different would your relationships have been if you were able to stay above the line in your communication? So this is where I'd love some feedback from somebody. How different would your relationships have been if you could have stayed above the line?
A world of difference. I just went through the whole everything below the line, Paul. Denial, blame, justify, shame, wanting to quit. But thanks to you, just before the quitting bell, we just brought it up above the line and now taken responsibility. So it's far from perfect, but it's a way better place above the line.
So everybody, this is a friend and a client who said that she would gladly be on the call tonight and answer some questions. So Linda, what do you feel like sharing? What was going on that you feel like sharing and are comfortable in sharing that caused you to want to get coaching?
Well, it was complete desperation. I was just at the end of my rope. We tried everything that we knew from our skills, you know, that we could try to work on it, but we just didn't have the skills to pull it together, and we were really coming undone. It really just felt like the last desperate attempt. And so I tried coaching. I tried your coaching program.
And what shifted? And I know these are sort of leading questions, but they're important questions. What did you learn? What's different?
Well, what's different is, oh gosh, what shifted, first of all, was that I completely saw my contribution to the problem. and I saw how it played out over the years leading up to just the complete breakdown of what used to be friend, partner, lover, but the whole triangle collapsed. And so that is where I found myself a couple of months ago when I contacted you.
And what's
your desperation?
What's been the breakthrough? How are you now?
Now it's, well, now I see my role in it, and I see where I can take responsibility, at least for my contribution to the problem, to perpetuating the problem. And I see where I need to do the self-healing so that I don't bring broken pieces to the partnership.
Yeah. And I want to be careful so that people don't think that, you know, when you're taking responsibility, it's not about blaming yourself. It's about what can you do in the future. And if it's here's the good news, bad news. If it's all your partner's doing that's causing the problems, then basically you're pretty powerless. It's almost good news to know that you're part of the problem, because then you can be part of the solution. And if you're not part of the problem because of the way you communicate, then it's very hard to be part of the solution.
Mm.
So any last thing? I mean, I remember you saying at one point, you out of our first session, you said, after like an hour, you said you walked out of the office, and what did you say about your beloved?
He was different.
Yeah. He wasn't in the session. She was in the session. She walks out of the session. He was different. I love that.
He was. I don't know how that happened, but it wasn't my imagination. And it was more than just a shift in perception. He responded as if he was on a coaching call, and he wasn't. He wasn't present for the call.
Yeah.
So somehow, however I came out of my room, it made an effect on how he treated me. And so I was able to move forward with the homework, with the recommendation, Paul, because my husband was suddenly different, receptive to working on it, you know, and he hadn't been before.
Wow. Thank you. Any last closing thought on that, or any questions for Linda? Great.
I do want to tell everybody that my husband hasn't been on the call, but just seeing how I've sort of been going through a transformation, just doing the coaching separately on my own, he wants to do the program now himself. He wants to start over and do it with me, just from seeing the benefit I've gotten out of this.
Yeah, and by the way, coaching, well, the process we go through, it's not about blaming anybody. A lot of times why especially men aren't interested in therapy is because they think that it's going to be a process of them being made wrong. And this is not that. And so that actually ties in with one of the core concepts I want to give you, so that if you walk away from this call and just understand this concept, it will be a time well spent. And there's something called the listening switch. And the listening switch, it's especially strong in the masculine, but both masculine and feminine have it. The listening switch, as soon as it hears anything that it interprets as bad, stupid, or wrong, what's it do? It flips off. And so they can see your mouth moving, but they're in another world. So it'd be really good to know what are the triggers that flip the listening switch off. And when you've lost somebody, what can you do to get them back again? And there's five main triggers that kick off the listening switch. And I want to tell you, I'm going to give you one other thing. Now I'm just going to go into the five triggers. I will move that other thing over so that we cover it before I'm done. These five triggers are, and hopefully you've got that printout in front of you, if you go to page 6, on your printout, I'm going to go through those five triggers. Number 1 is case building. Number 2 is storytelling. Number 3 is message assuming. Number 4 is cup stuffing. Number 5 is the fatal F's. If you understand what they are, you can understand how to avoid them without avoiding the issues. Number one, case building. My family was really, really good at this. We were able to do a lot of case building. And you'll know your case building when you start using language like right, wrong, good, bad, should, shouldn't, have to, must. And even if it's for good intention, if you're case building, what happens is you tend to get resistance. So I'm going to ask you to do something. Hopefully you can do this and still listen on the phone. So you're going to have to listen, but I want you to put your hands in front of you. Normally you'd be watching me do this. So put them right in front of your chest, right in front of your heart, like in a prayer position. And if you've got to lean your head against the phone or whatever to hold the phone up. And when I say go, what I want you to do is press really hard with your right hand. Press, press, press. Okay, now stop. Now, I just need a little feedback since I can't see you. Where are your hands right now? And some of you, what happens is your hands are still right in front of you because when you started pressing with your right hand, what did the left hand do? Started pressing back. Now, some of you might have been really innovative and creative and the right hand pushed the left hand way over. But most people, especially if they're looking at me, they will end up with their hands in the exact same place because anytime it feels like you're forcing something, what you get is resistance. And so it's learning how to communicate in a way that doesn't use force, that doesn't use that, because then all you get is resistance. So case building, you can either be building a case against somebody or a connection with them. And the purpose of this communication method, based on what I understand of nonviolent communication, is the purpose is to be able to enter somebody else's world or have them enter yours using language. And it's amazing when you can enter their world. You're not building a case against them, you're building a connection with them. And sometimes what happens is you'll feed back what you think you heard, and they'll end up in tears because they feel so heard and understood by you. It's an amazing tool. So number one mistake people make, the number one trigger, case building. Number two, storytelling. And the mind is a meaning-making machine. And what I want to do is I'm going to go through these five, and then I'm going to get some feedback from you. Which is your favorite mistake to make? And don't get all serious and worried about which ones you make. Normally, we make them all. It's just how consistently do we do them. And the reason I wrote these down is because with my background in systems, I started looking at my system of communication and started looking at where things are going wrong and finding the biggest mistakes that I made and other people made. So case building was number one, storytelling number two, and I'll give you an example of storytelling. My former beloved and I were in bed one night, and on my side of the bed, there's a light switch for the overhead light. On her side of the bed is a small reading lamp. And what happened is I was about to turn off the overhead light because I was going to sleep. And I look over at her, and she's all upset. I go, honey, what story are you telling yourself? And what she said is, I'm telling myself the story that my needs don't matter to you. You get to read by the good light. I get to read by the crappy light. When you're done reading by the good light, you turn it out. Leave me with the crappy light to read by. Now, Is there any chance that I might have had a different story than that? Yes? No?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a very different story than that. What I did is rather than argue with her, which would have been like doing those things where I push against her, I'm right, you're wrong, no, she's right, you know, back and forth, we do that thing where you push with your hands. Instead, I really entered her world and I said, oh, no wonder you're upset. That's an upsetting story. Can I tell you what my story is? Now, I'm not sure if I said it exactly that way, but that's the essence of it. And she got it that I got it. I wasn't resisting it. And then I told her my story. My story is, if I don't get out, if I don't turn out the light and I fall asleep, she has to get out of bed, go around the bed, turn out the light, come around the bed in the dark, stub her toe. It's going to keep her awake, make it hard to go to sleep. I totally thought I was taking care of her needs. But you can see it's the exact same situation, but very different stories. So the next night, I, being a creature of habit, I go to turn out the light. And just before I touch the light switch, I remember, I said, oh, honey, now that I know what it means to you, if I turn out the light, I'll leave the light on. What do you think she said? No, now that I know what it means to you, turn the light off. So what was different? Only our stories. And what causes people not to want to listen to us is if they don't like our stories. They don't like that our stories are making them bad, stupid, wrong. So there's a way to listen that changes the way you hear stories. And way to listen is that almost all emotional communication is one of two things. And this is really important. Almost all emotional communication is either an act of love or a cry for help. So if you think about it, when she was upset that I was turning off the light and wasn't taking care of her needs, was that an act of love or a cry for help?
Cry for help.
Yeah, she was crying for help. And so if I'm able to hear that, that's much different than hearing that I'm being attacked, being made wrong, that I shouldn't do it. So what I did was just enter her world and then have her enter my world. So that's number two. Number three is message assuming. And message assuming is similar. It's like when somebody says something or even starts to say something and you jump ahead. Oh, I know what they're going to say. I know what they mean. And you stop listening. And the thing is, our brains tend to have a small ability to remember things. So if you've got an important conversation, especially if it's emotional, you might only be able to talk for about 40 words or about 30 to 60 seconds before you check in to see what they heard. So with message assuming, what you're going to do is, if you're in the listening place, you're going to go, hold on a second, honey. Let me feedback what I think I just heard. Or if you're in the place where you're talking, you might go, hold on a second. Can you tell me what you think you just heard? Oh, wow. Now, if you say, honey, will you take out the trash, and they get all in a huff, you go, wow, can you tell me what you heard me say? And they go, yeah, what I heard you say is, I never help around the house. And is that different than what I said? I said, will you take out the trash? They heard I never help around the house. Now, the temptation is to correct them, to go, that's not what I said. You never hear me right. How come you always change what I say? And how productive would that be? Not at all. So what do? I enter their world, go, wow, no wonder you're upset. That's what you heard? Can I try again? And you try again. Now, when I was teaching this to a group of women in prison, it took one woman 10 times hearing a single sentence before she could actually feed it back. Because she kept hearing her own story in her own mind and getting triggered. Is that making sense to everybody?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So the second part, though, is, so one is you ask your partner, can you tell me what you heard me say? And the other part is when you're listening, you can go, wait a second, can I tell you what I think I heard? So when people talk to me, sometimes they'll say, well, do you understand me? I'll say, I have no idea. I'll tell you what I heard, and you can tell me whether I understood you or not. Because I can think I understood, and I can be very wrong. So that's number three. Number one, case building. Number two, storytelling. Number three, message assuming. Number four is something called cup stuffing. Now, cup stuffing, if you think about it, who'll volunteer here to do a little interaction with me, play with me a little bit?
I will.
Okay. If you come home and your cup is full, how much more can you get in there?
Nothing.
What if I'm really nice?
It's still not going to fit.
What if I yell and scream and withhold love, sex, and affection?
That's just going to make it worse.
So if somebody's cup is full, and what I mean by full is emotionally full, if you've had a challenging day, if you've had an emotional day, if you had a day that where things weren't working out, if your cup is full, then you don't have a lot of capacity. Now, the thing is, what you can do is when you come home and your partner says, hey, can we talk about the spending habits? Rather than jump on them and say, just leave me the F alone, can't you see my cup is full? You go, honey, cup full. Let's talk in an hour. And it's like a passcode. It's get out of jail free. You can just, and when you do that, you don't break the connection, but you ask for space. Because sometimes we just need the space. And sometimes if we don't know what we're doing, what we do to get the space is we trigger our partner and they leave us alone. And then that night in bed, it's really lonely because it feels like there's a Grand Canyon in between you because what you did to trigger your partner hurt their feelings and they don't want to come back. Or the other way around, if you got triggered, if you went to ask your partner something and their reaction was way out of proportion, most likely it's because their cup was full. And in a minute, I'm going to check in with you all and see if you've got any questions. And which one of these do you tend to do the most? So if you weren't making these mistakes, most likely you wouldn't be on the call. All right. Number five is the fatal F's. And this one is really important. Take notes on this one. The masculine, and this is the same in gay couples, lesbian couples, regular couples, it doesn't matter. The masculine energy, if the feminine energy comes to the masculine in pain, upset, hurt, the masculine listens this way. It's either my fault or my responsibility. And if you think it's your fault or responsibility, what do you want to do as quickly as possible? Get them out of pain. Because the longer you're in pain, the worse I feel about myself. Now, does the feminine want to be fixed? Yes or no?
No.
Not really. And actually, there's, you know, I'll call it either my feminine or my masculine side. I don't want to be fixed either. So what you can do is if your lover comes to you in pain, here's a key question. Honey, do you want empathy or do you want advice? Empathy or advice. Now, if you want to set your partner up, now see, we're really good, or a lot of people are very good at setting your partner up to lose. I like to teach about how to set your partner up to win. So if you just want to be heard, the way to set your partner up to win is not assume that they're a mind reader, but actually go in and go, honey, I'm really hurting right now. My cup is so full. And I just need some empathy. I need you, would you be willing to listen to me for like 5 or 10 minutes? Just let me dump everything out and not offer me any advice. Would you be willing to do that? And see, that's setting your partner up to win because they know what it's going to take to win with you. Now, if they say no, my cup is full now too, you know that you've really probably just avoided a big fight. Because you ask permission. If their cup is full, they weren't going to hear you. And that could have caused a lot of problems if you started talking and assumed they were going to hear you and they didn't. So the fatal F's, there's three F's. Fix, fight, flee. So number one is the fixing. We just talked about that. Number two is if you come home upset, like you're upset with the boss, and you come to your lover and you're all upset, he goes, well, did you try this? Did you do that? Did you do it? And it's like, no. Well, you ought to do that. So they've given you, they've tried to fix you, they've offered you their advice. The next night you come home, you're upset. Again, they try to do what? Fix you. When that doesn't work, it ends up in a fight. Because they don't feel like they're being honored and respected, and you don't feel like you're being honored and respected. So it ends up in a fight, and then you come home a third night, and you're upset. The boss did the same thing, and your lover sees you coming from a mile away, knows the look on your face, and they're gone, either physically or emotionally. So they have fled. So the fatal laughs are fix, fight, flee. So let's just dive in, and I want to get some feedback and get some questions. Which of these tends to be most dominant in your communication styles? Case building, storytelling, message assuming, cup stuffing, or the fatal F's? Who's a brave soul who'll speak up?
It's a combination of several of them that show up in my relationship. Some more on either side. Like, I didn't realize that my husband's cup was stuffed. Because when I used to come home, I emptied the cup before I got in the door. So I didn't understand that coming home with that cup stuffed. So that was really messing things up. And because of how he was reacting and me not knowing, I started doing the fatal F fleeing, you know, totally checking out, like, emotionally. And then physically, too, just making myself busy when I knew he would be here, just to avoid the confrontation.
Right.
So a lot of cup stuffing leading to the fatal Fs, but also I see the assuming and the storytelling. Maybe not so much the case building.
Yeah. Thank you. Who else?
Can you hear me, Tom?
Go ahead.
This is Joyce. I identify mostly with the fatal F, fixing, fighting, and fleeing. I'm always trying to fix things, and it just even happens with my daughters. You know, not so much in a relationship, because I'm really not in a relationship right now that I can quantify. But the same thing happens, like you said, with other family members. So, you know, my daughter comes in yesterday, because I'm visiting them right now in California, and she starts to interact with me a little bit, and I mentioned something to her, and she just flew off the handle, and I'm instantly ready to fix what's wrong with her. You know, so then that turns into a fight. And then we had plans to go to yoga together, and on the way to yoga, she's just like, I am so mad at you right now. I just want to take you back home. I said, go ahead, take me back home then, you know. Like, it was ridiculous. It was a ridiculous situation. But we both took a deep breath and said, let's just regroup, go to yoga, and go from there. So we at least had enough awareness to come through that process, but that's what I see happening. That's my habit. That's what I see happening all the time is number five.
Yeah. And I just want to thank you for sharing that. And I just want to say a lot of times that habit comes out of the best of intentions.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to see our lover in pain or our children or, you know, many mama bears have that with their kids. You know, they think that they're protecting, and what they're really doing is saying it's not okay for you to feel how you currently feel.
Well, and I ended up saying to her, because, you know, we did spend some time together this past weekend, and you taught me some of these tips that I didn't realize before. So what I ended up saying to her in the midst of all this was, honey, if you would have just come in and said, I'm really having a bad day, I can't wait to get to yoga to release, you know, all this tension and get centered again because I just feel like I'm ready to burst, then it would have been a different discussion that we had whenever I asked you this other question. So I got some of that and was able to portray that to her, but our habits still took us to that fighting mode for a while.
Yeah.
And it's hard to transition, you know, whenever you don't, whenever you have those habits ingrained in you.
Well, and I look at it, when I work with a client, they normally, it's a 3-month commitment because what we're trying to do is change the habits, patterns, and beliefs. And one of the first things is to even be able to identify it. There's a part of your brain called the reticular activating system. And what that brain, that part of the brain is, it filters information coming in, what's important, what's not. Like, at one point, I bought a Prius, and it was like, I looked around, I said, where did all these Priuses arrive from? I mean, I thought I'd end up with the only one around, and, you know, when I drive into Boulder, it's like I'm surrounded by Priuses. Although I don't have that car anymore, what happens is when your reticular activating system is tuned in, it says, let Priuses in. Or if you're in a restaurant and you hear your name, there could be 100 conversations going on, and boom, you hear Joyce or you hear Linda or whatever it is, or Lisa, and instantly you're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to do is have you first be able to identify what these mistakes are and then start paying attention so that when you make them, you can kind of laugh and go, oh, honey, I was just building a case, or I was trying to fix you, or I was in a, you know, I was case building or cup stuffing or whatever it is. And you can laugh about it. And if you can laugh about it, you don't take it so seriously.
Yeah.
So anybody else want to share what you got out of this last section here? Excuse me. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. I am going to tell you one more part to this, and then going to answer any questions and end it for the night. And part of, remember I started with making decisions. So like one of the decisions to make is how do you want to communicate? And I think, Joyce, you might have said it, when you didn't know a better way of communicating, you were doing the best you could.
Mm-hmm.
And like if until you know these distinctions, doing the best you can may be case building, storytelling, message assuming, cup stuffing, and the fatal F's. That's the best that we know how. But now all of a sudden, like, oh, the lights have come on. I can see that there's another option. So one of the decisions to make is, do I want to shift the way I communicate? Do I want to master this so that I actually master the ability to enter somebody else's world? And I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. If you go to page 5 on this, it's called the Communication Star. And this is going to be the last, like, chunk of information that I give tonight. So the Communication Star, there's 2 triangles, and it's sort of like the Star of David. So one of the triangles is a triangle you use when you're listening. When you're listening, what do you want the other person to feel? You want them to feel heard, understood, and valued. And if you can think of any time that you've ever been upset in an argument, like Linda with your husband, Joyce with your daughter, with everybody else, it's like, did that other person feel heard, understood, and valued? And
I can say no.
Yeah.
He did not.
And one of the reasons that stops us from understanding them is we are afraid that if we understand them, they'll perceive that as agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding doesn't equal agreement. It equals understanding. And when they feel really heard, like you can feed it back better than what they said it, when they feel heard at that level, their heart opens up and they feel valued. And isn't that what we really want our lovers to feel? We want them to feel heard, understood, and most importantly, we want them to feel valued.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we're battling to be right, the other person's hearing that we're trying to make them wrong. And that doesn't feel valuing at all. That kind of sucks. So when you're listening, you want to be able to feed it back and make sure and go, honey, did I hear you right? Let me tell you what I think I heard. Was that right? Did I understand you? And you check in. And people often tell me, well, this is not the way I normally communicate. This is not normal communication. I go, yeah, damn good thing. You look at what's happening around this planet with normal communication. Our political body, without getting into pointing fingers, is insane right now. Because what are they doing? They're all pointing fingers. We're wasting billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, in our government by our elected officials spending most of their time and energy pointing fingers at each other. And nobody feels heard, understood, or valued. So anyway, without going too much further on that rant, I'm going to go down to the next part of this. So when you're listening, you want your partner to feel heard, understood, and valued. And when you're speaking, there's three key components to that. Number one is to be conscious. And what I want you to be conscious of is that what your partner thinks they're hearing is often different than what you think you're saying. And which one is more important to your partner? What you think you said or what they think they heard?
What they think they heard.
Yeah. And so how do you find out what they think they heard? You ask them, honey, can you tell me what you heard? Oh, no wonder you're upset. You heard that. I thought I said this, but it obviously didn't work. I thought I said, can you take out the trash? You heard you never help around the kitchen. So I want to be conscious. And if I want to communicate with you, then what's most important to me is what you heard. Now, there's this silly expression I once heard. This surgeon comes out of the operating room, and one of the other doctors comes up to him and says, doctor, how was the operation? He said, the operation was a great success, but the patient died. So where was the doctor focused? For the operation to be a great success, who was he focusing on? Himself. You know, because as far as the patient's concerned, if the patient died, that's not a successful operation. So how does this apply in communication? If you're going to communicate and your partner doesn't feel heard, understood, or valued, or it feels like you're attacking them when you communicate, this is not a successful communication. So first, be conscious. What is it you want them to feel? So like your daughter, husband, what is it you really want them to feel? Do you want them to feel loved and understood and connected and cherished? Or you want them to feel made wrong? And I grew up in a family where we really worked hard at making each other wrong. Now, luckily, it's not that way anymore. I mean, for the last, actually, 20 years plus, it's been extremely amazing. My mother was just here a couple of weeks ago. We get along fine. I get along great with my younger brother. But it wasn't always that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing is compassionate. So when you're communicating from a place of consciousness, of compassion. And what does compassion mean in this particular arena? It means meeting somebody where they're at. And a lot of times, out of the best intention in the world, we make somebody else wrong. Like they come home and they're really sad about something, and you go, "Oh, honey, you shouldn't feel that way. You should feel this way." And what do they end up hearing? Honey, the way you're feeling is not okay. You're doing it wrong. Here's the right way to feel. And how well does that work? Is that a connecting habit or a triggering habit?
Triggering.
Yep. So the job here is to meet somebody where they're at. And to do that, you've got to understand what's going on in their mind. And actually, one great way of doing that is finding out what story that they're telling themselves without taking it personally. It really helped with Kristen when I could go, wow, honey, what story are you telling yourself? And she told me the story that I didn't care about her needs. I was not defensive in that particular point. And now, years ago, I would have been very defensive. You did it wrong. That's not how I'm doing it. But this time, I just entered her world and was compassionate, met her where she's at. And it was like, wow. No wonder you're feeling the way you feel because you're telling yourself that story. Now, the last part is courageous. So connect to them, become conscious of what it is you want them to hear. Become compassionate, meet them where they're at. And courageous, talk openly and honestly about your feelings, not your judgments. I'm feeling scared. I'm feeling vulnerable. I'm feeling hurt right now, and I'm needing some love and support.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at it, how different would communication be if you and your beloved were focused on communicating this way? And you heard from Linda earlier, she just started focusing on it herself, just changing herself internally. And all of a sudden, the communication and her husband had changed. So, any questions? Actually, yeah, any questions? And what I'd like to do is hear what you've gotten out of this call, because I'm going to do sort of a mini wrap-up here. But what have you gotten from this call so far?
This is Joyce again. I would just say what I got out of it was it really does make a difference whenever you apply these principles. It starts to make a difference, you know, in your communication.
And
we don't know what we don't know. We don't know what we don't know until someone helps us.
Right. And what do you think the impact is of communicating this way?
Oh, my gosh. It's priceless.
Yeah, there was an interesting study they did. I think it was on Oprah. Sounds more like a Jerry Springer study, but I think it actually was on Oprah on why men have affairs. And everybody in the audience was kind of going, well, you know, for sex, for this, for that. And what it turned out the number one reason is they wanted to be heard and understood and valued again. And they didn't feel heard in their home. So if you want a skill that transforms relationships, that is one of the most powerful skills that I know. Anybody else want to say what you got out of the call tonight?
I got a great overview and a refresher of what we've been working on, Paul. So this was great to just hear the whole thing and review the study guide again. Just to reinforce what we've been working on the coaching calls.
Yeah, thank you. Anyone else? I know we had a lot less people than signed up for the call because with the crazy thing of deleting 9,000 names, most of those names, I didn't have a chance to remind them of the call. So we had a smaller group than I had expected. So anybody else feel like sharing before we move to the final thing? Presto. All right, so one of the things is to look at what the next step is. If you want to take this on and do this in your life and in your relationship, what I do is to help people make that decision is I'll spend 45 minutes with them on a one-on-one call and hear really three main things. What do you want out of a relationship? Like, some people are playing their relationship. I got to tell a quick story on this. I play racquetball. And one day I was down, I had three, and the person I play against, she had 14. So it was 14-3. And I realized it did not look good for me to win this game. So I was playing not to lose. I was hoping that I could lose and look good at losing. And I stepped up to serve, and I realized, I took a second and said, what do I really want? I said, oh, what I really want is I want to win. So what I want you to think about in your relationships, are you playing not to lose or are you playing to win? Playing to win is very different. Like you really get clear, if you had the relationship of your dreams, how would it be? What would the level of intimacy and understanding and connection be? So one of the first things I do on the call is help you get clear what it is you really want in the relationship of your dreams. The second thing is I help you get clear on where you really are now. And the third thing is to get clear what are the roadblocks, what's getting in between you and having the relationship you really want. And then we look at, is it worth working together? Are we a fit? Because I have a certain personality, and some people really enjoy working with me, some people don't at all. And why I do the 45 minutes is I want to make sure it's going to be fun for both of us to work together. So if you're interested in finding out more, what you can do is go to magicrelationship.net/session, S-E-S-S-I-O-N. Now, I only do about 5 complimentary sessions a month, so you want to make sure to get on there and see if there's one available. And if there is, book it as soon as possible, because a lot of people are going to get this recording. I'm sending this recording out to all 9,000 people. So they're all going to get it. So if that interests you, that would be awesome. And if it doesn't interest you, that's awesome too. I thank you for your time. That is one of the most precious gifts you can give. And thank you, Linda, for being on the call. And thank you, everybody, for listening and participating to the level that you felt like participating. So that's it. Have a great night. I will talk to you all later. Paul Sterling signing off from Estes Park, Colorado.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you,
Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Feel better.
Good night.